Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Winter's over and the snow is gone. Go get your gloves and pull your work boots on. Gotta clear that patch, pick them stones. You know the sun is gonna warm those lazy bones. Winter's over and the work's just starting. Time to get busy in the family garden. Turning the soil and planting the seeds. Laying down mulch and pulling up weeds. Mowing the corn, row on row. Then you stand right back and you watch it grow. No, even little children gotta do their part in helping grow in the family.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51 it is our annual Spring Garden Show, as we offer you hints, tips, and advice on growing plants in our often inclement northern Wisconsin climate. If you've got questions about gardening up north or about landscaping, trees, flowers, perennials, or annuals, this is your show.
Got a cool spring rain and a summer breeze. Yellow squash, black-eyed peas. Japanese kale and pinto beans. Italian tomatoes and turnip greens. Now we're picking and a canning and a working hard and trying to beat the winter through the family garden.
Joining us today by phone, the always informative and entertaining David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company in Stevens Point. And here in the studio, Associate Professor of Biology Paul Whitaker of UW-Marathon County. The only thing we're missing is you and your questions. If you like Larry Mueller's Garden Talk every Friday, you will love our show today. Think of it as a special edition of Garden Talk just for those of us who live up north. Our lines are open for your phone calls right now at 261-6371, 261-6371, or toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And again, this show will work best if you call us. Right now, our lines are wide open. And if you've got specific questions about what plants to put in your garden, how to get them started in this kind of weather, or some of the challenges that we all face with landscaping, with shrubs, with trees, with pruning, give us a call right now, 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are wide open. You can be first in line. David Ryle, thank you so much for being with us today. How's business down in Stevens Point?
Today it's doing really well. The build-up to Mother's Day weekend, it always gets to be a little hot and heavy at this point. So right now I'm pretty happy.
And this has been kind of a challenging spring for us so far, hasn't it?
It's been an absolute monster.
What are people asking you when they come in? What questions are you getting?
The biggest questions that I've heard, the most consistent, over the last month, has been the damage to trees by rabbits, deer, moles, voles. Whether that damage can be actually dealt with, whether the tree is savable. We've heard that quite a lot.
I have an apple tree that I planted last year, and I went out this spring, and it is just about girdled from the rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit that's still there, but how do you know whether you should just pull the thing up and start over or take a chance on it?
Well, here it's not an absolute, but it's at least something you can work with. If there is more than 60% of the bark cambium layers destroyed, girdled, the chances that the plant will be able to move enough water and nutrients up what's remaining to the rest of the tree become, well, slight, to say the least. So I'd say if it's more than 60% of the bark gone, quit your losses, yank the tree.
And you can be confused, too, because that tree will still bud, right?
It will. It has enough It has enough water in its cells to continue the normal processes, but it won't be able to follow through.
And Paul Whitaker, you teach biology here at UW Marathon County. How is this late spring affecting your schedule?
My spring course is botany, and I usually put off my plant diversity unit till the end of the semester so I can bring some nice live plant materials in from outdoors for the students to look at. Boy, they're just not around. The things that I normally can bring in 2, 3, 4 weeks before the end of the semester, they're just popping out of the ground now with 4 days left.
And we are used to seeing snow on Rib Mountain in May, but usually not this much. It's like the entire northern slope is still covered with snow. Well, I'm going to go right to the phones because we have people lining up here for David Ryle and Paul Whitaker. 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. Barb in Spirit, you're on Route 51. Hello, Barb.
Hi. I have a question about planting my raspberry plants. I purchased a few, and I'd like some suggestions on what to do with that and mulching and that kind of thing.
David, you want to take that?
Sure. Raspberries are you know, the biggest mistake people ever make with them is they plant them too deep. You really want to plant them so that the roots are barely covered by soil. Literally, no more than about half an inch of soil. Because if you cover too deep, invariably they just won't break dormancy and the plant will just remain a brown stick. So try and plant them so quite literally you have no more than half an inch of soil over the top of the roots. They should be spaced out about every 2 feet. Don't apply any fertilizer till the plants are in active growth, and even when they are in active growth, apply a very weak fertilizer. They're not going to utilize much fertilizer early on.
Okay, thank you. And what about mulching?
Mulching, for this season, I wouldn't worry too much. Next year, when you start producing fruiting crops, right after you've... Is this a June-bearing variety or
yes,
a fall-bearing?
It's a June.
A June-bearing variety. Right after you've taken your crop... Remove those old canes that produce the crop. Those ones are going to be cut out to the ground. And when you finish doing that, that's the time to mulch.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. We're going to go from Barb in Spirit to Diane in Mercer, who I believe has a question about blueberries. So we're going from raspberries to blueberries. Hello, Diane.
Yeah, I'd like to buy some blueberry plants, and I was wondering what variety to buy and how far to space them.
Is that one going to be me?
Yeah, we'll throw it back to you again.
All right. Depending on the variety, ma'am, the spacing could be as far apart as 6 feet for varieties like Patriot, which become, you know, very large, literally 4 to 6 feet in height, 6 feet across in diameter at maturity, to as close as 2 feet with varieties like Norske and Top Hat, because they're dwarfs. They're both low bush varieties. They can even be grown in containers.
Do you recommend either type?
Well, when I was younger, I would have said reaching down to harvest those Top Hat and Norske wouldn't be a problem. But now that I'm in my late 40s, I seem to creak and bend a little bit harder. So I like the taller varieties.
Okay. Up here in Mercer, I wouldn't have to really change the soil much for them, would it?
You do want a pH round about 4.5 to 5. They actually are an ericaceous plant. They're an acid-loving plant. And I wouldn't presume that your pH is correct. Much better to buy a small pH testing kit. They're very cheap, very easy to use. And just find out exactly what your pH is before you plant your blueberries.
Yeah, Mercer is north of the Lakeland area, and I think we've got a lot of peat in the soil up there. Is that correct?
Which is great for blueberries.
We do have a lot of maple. I live in an unusual part of Mercer. It's all maple and hemlock. I'm wondering if it is as acidic as the rest.
Buy a little pH testing kit.
Okay.
You know, it costs you $2.99. It gives you a definitive answer, and then you can go from there. Then you know what you're working with.
Okay.
All right, thanks so much, Diane. And Paul Whitaker, what are the challenges facing a plant like blueberries? How do they take a different kind of soil than most of the varieties that we plant in north-central Wisconsin?
One of the interesting things about blueberries is that most plants way out at the tips of their very fine roots have root hairs that they absorb most of the water and nutrients from. Blueberries don't have that. They form associations with fungi in the soil, and that helps them absorb some of those nutrients. They're just adapted to a very low pH, a very acidic soil, as David mentioned.
So you may have to have completely different soil for your blueberries than you do for anything else that you're growing in your yard.
Exactly.
This is our Spring Garden Show. Our guests are Paul Whitaker, UW Marathon County Associate Professor of Biology, and David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company in Stevens Point. Again, this is your show. If you live up north, this is kind of like garden talk for the North Woods. And our lines are open again, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch you deep and low, gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rain comes tumbling down.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
The businesses, professionals, and organizations that support Wisconsin Public Radio's programming play an important part in our financial health. When you visit a WPR sponsor, please let them know that you appreciate their support of this station. Thanks very much.
But there's nothing that a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your own very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs and eat them with gravy. You can eat them with beans, tint or navy. Put them on the side, put them in the middle. A homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What a life be without homegrown tomatoes.
We're going to be talking about homegrown tomatoes next on Route 51 with our guests David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company in Stevens Point and Paul Whitaker of UW Marathon County. And again, we're taking your questions, your gardening questions at 261-6371 or 1-800-780-97. David Ryle, let's talk about tomatoes right now. What are the interesting varieties? Anything new that the Jung Seed Company has this year?
In terms of new, no, it's older varieties, I think, that are kind of coming to the forefront again.
The heirloom varieties?
Yeah, some of the heirloom varieties. We have a one called Granddaddy. Been around quite a long time. I mean, this one produces fruit literally a pound a piece.
Good.
Think about that. A pound of a tomato. You didn't need both hands to carry a bag home. You know, things like that, we're seeing a lot more interest in the heirlooms than we used to. People tend to be looking back more than looking forward in that regard.
And I guess a lot of that, Paul, is the fact that when you're planting something in the garden, it's really you're really getting back in touch with nature, getting back in something with that's basic, getting back with your history. A family planting a garden is something that goes back hundreds of years, and maybe you do want to plant some of those tomatoes that you remember from your childhood or that that your granddad used to plant 60, 70 years ago.
I think we're seeing quite a backlash against the uniformity of supermarket produce that really doesn't taste all that good. It's been shipped a long distance. It's been picked unripe. And, you know, some of those tomatoes might be delicious if you were to grow them in your garden, but when you pick them green and ship them out halfway across the country and ripen them on the store, in the store, they never taste as good as stuff from the garden. And I think that's why people start to look towards the heirlooms. Plus, people garden out of interest. You know, a lot of the heirlooms have interesting shapes and colors and flavors, and that's why we garden. It's the fun of it.
One of the things I enjoy doing is buying seeds, and of course it's too late to do that for tomatoes this year, but I like to grow. I usually put about 8 different varieties of tomatoes under grow lights. And I have some tried and true varieties that I use every year, but I'm always trying something new from some other part of the world, and it's exciting to see those plants come up and see how they do, what they look like, and how the fruit develops. Some of them have the big potato leaves, the old heirloom varieties, and they really come in all sizes and shapes, and unfortunately, all different kinds of maturation times, which, David, again, is a challenge up here.
It is. you know, the late finishing varieties in particular, the indeterminates, they have to be managed carefully for fruit production. It's very easy to make a mistake with those and apply just a, let's just say, a 10-10-10 fertilizer and think, well, that's an average fertilizer. But with a tomato, and especially with the large leaf types, you have to be careful. You want the plant to place emphasis on fruit production and not on leaf production. And excessive fertilizing, especially excessive nitrogen, can really cause you a problem. You end up with a very hefty-looking plant, but unfortunately, the fruit don't ripen in time for the end of the season.
I'll tell you what I did once. I grew an indeterminate variety in a big bin, you know, in a big like a 20-gallon container.
Right.
And I did put a lot of fertilizer in, and it produced great leaves. And then the tomatoes themselves had this blight. This you know, the very top of them turned kind of mushy and brown. Was that a problem with nutrients?
Well, more than likely, it was due to a lack of calcium. Sometimes, are you familiar with a condition called blossom end rot?
That was it. That's what I had. And I found that if I put lime in the same kind that you put on like a football field.
There you go. Dolomitic limestone. And why is that? Because dolomitic limestone is nothing else but calcium carbonate and magnesium carbonate. That's all you're providing, calcium and magnesium. Yes, it has an alkalizing effect. It has a raise. It raises pH, but it provides the plant with a generous supply of calcium. And that tends to basically cut out the problems that blossom end rot cause.
Paul Whitaker, it all comes down to chemistry in the end, doesn't it, in a lot of ways?
It certainly does. I think the blossom end rot can also be a problem with drought. And if you were growing a big tomato variety in a tub, it most likely was experiencing some drought stress. And so the lime probably supplemented that, made it a little bit more drought resistant and prevented the blossom end rot.
261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg with David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company, Paul Whitaker of UW Marathon County. This edition of Route 51 is Garden Talk for the North Woods. And let's go to Frank in Arborvita. And Frank, you've got a question about raspberries.
Yes, I do. I have a raspberry bed, which has served the family very well for a couple of decades. And, of course, in the last couple of years, it's run out. And my question is, after I rip that out of there, I get all the old roots and canes out of there, would it be folly to put raspberries back in that bed?
David, this is for you again.
Okay. Well, the short answer is yes, for a variety of reasons. If it's possible, replant your raspberries in another part of the garden. 4 or 5 feet away from the original planting would be fine, but I wouldn't recommend planting in the exact same site.
Okay.
And David, why is that?
Well, there's all kinds of reasons. Keeping a plant, a single species growing on a single piece of land for an extended period of time allows certain kinds of diseases to become endemic, and there's always a chance that some of that would be in the soil after you'd removed the old crop.
So if even if you pulled up all the roots and everything else, you still might have those diseases there.
There's a good chance there is still some of that there. And raspberries, remember, are very, very, very susceptible to virus.
Frank,
that's another little problem that you always have to keep in mind with raspberries.
Frank, do you have a follow-up?
Well, I guess my feeling is I'll dump a bunch of peat in there and plant blueberries.
David, would the diseases tend to hurt the blueberries, or if you change crops, is that okay?
They belong to two very different families. One belongs to the family of ribes. Blueberries belong to the family of, oh boy.
The Ericaceae.
It is ericaceous. Yeah. They're acid-loving,
right.
but I'm talking
that's
about
that's why we've got the guy who loves Latin here.
Oh, Vaccinium.
Vaccinium, thank
right.
you.
You're welcome.
Yes. Vaccinium.
So
no, they're not related, so that there's less of an issue there. But to replant raspberries in the same area, I really wouldn't do it.
All right,
thank you,
Frank. Thanks so much for the phone call. We're going to try to squeeze in another one before the news break. Let's go back to the phones, and we have Pamela in Wausau. Pamela, you're on Route 51.
Hello, guys. Question for either of the guests about rose bushes. I've tried a variety of different types of rose bushes over the years in various different locations, and never to any success. Always get black spots. I'm out there religiously trying to take care of those leaves and buds, and has never had a success with it. So I'm wondering if there's something or a type of rose bush I should look to more than another.
David, what would you recommend? Does the Jung Seed Company sell anything?
Well, if you're in Wausau, I would really suggest that you look towards shrub roses in particular. Try and stay away from hybrid teas and floribundas. They tend to be a little more susceptible to begin with.
Okay.
Most shrub roses tend to have a lot more hardiness in them.
Okay.
It's always a tough thing because people love hybrid tea roses. I mean, mm-hmm. I do. I adore them. I come from the British Isles. How could you not love them? But the reality is, growing them this far north is extremely challenging, both on you as the grower and on the plant. Mm-hmm. They don't do well in our extremely high temperatures that we get in our summers.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't particularly do well in very high levels of humidity either. And, of course, the last few years, that's exactly what we've had in summer.
Mm-hmm.
So they tend to be a lot more susceptible to problems. The shrub roses, well, they're a little more rough and ready. They can handle it.
What varieties would you recommend, David?
For shrubs?
Yeah.
Well, the Knockout series have done extremely well. They were developed right here in Wisconsin. Bill Radler's introductions, they've done immensely well. They really have. Any of the Morden series roses. Mordens were roses developed in Manitoba. Very tough, very hardy, can withstand the rigors of our winter and do very well.
Okay.
All right, Pamela, thanks so much for the phone call. How many gardening songs can we play in 1 hour? This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg, our guest today on our spring gardening show. David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company in Stevens Point, and Paul Whitaker, an associate professor of biology at UW Marathon County. And once again, we are offering gardening tips for those of us who live in north central Wisconsin and have to deal with the cold and the wet and the early growing, the early end of the growing season and the late start to it, and the extremes of temperature that we deal with up here. Our phone numbers, if you'd like to join the conversation, if you've got a question, we've got people who have the answers for you, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742. Let's go right to the phones, and we will talk to June in Arborvita, who has a question about upside-down tomato planters. June, you're on Route 51.
Hi. I'm interested in trying an upside-down tomato plant, but I need some help. Is there any specific variety that would be recommended for that? It's seems like such a great idea.
Well, there are ones I wouldn't recommend. I wouldn't recommend beefsteak tomatoes because, well, they just get to be too big and too heavy. Look for one of the more determinate varieties, one of the more naturally dwarf varieties to use. A variety that produces a tomato intended for salads, the sweet cherry varieties in particular do very well in that kind of situation.
Okay, thank you. I have Sweet 100 plants started, so that might be a good one to use.
That might be a good one to do.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any other of the grape tomatoes or planter tomatoes that you could recommend for us this year, David?
Well, it's a funny thing. I always get asked about recommending tomatoes, and I really don't like tomatoes.
Well, that's probably why you pronounced the word incorrectly.
Well, now, let's try and remember. This is my language, after all.
And we're just borrowing it, I know.
Yeah, there you go. The ones that really well are well-liked. Tumbler does very well indeed. Juliet is a really interesting-looking cherry. It looks like a miniature Viva Italia, you know, like a Roma-type tomato.
Okay.
Yeah, I like Juliet quite a bit.
Yeah, that's a very nice variety. That one does very well. Sweet Baby Girl has been very popular the last couple of years.
Are there any dwarf varieties that you could grow in planters that produce relatively big tomatoes?
Well, when you say relatively big, how big is
relatively? I'm not talking 2 or 3 pounds, but you know, you're let's say 10 ounces, 12 ounces, somewhere in there.
I would think Siberia would probably be one of the better ones. It's one of the earliest tomatoes to ripen, which is an added bonus. And it's not a particularly big plant. It's rather small, rather bushy, even though it is indeterminate.
And the early varieties, of course, the hybrid Early Girl is the one that is kind of the standard that you find in all the garden shops. But are there any other varieties that you'd recommend? I know you just mentioned Siberia. Some of these heirlooms from Russia, I guess, are particularly early.
I'm trying to think of what I'd say is for the earliest of all the heirlooms, really, to be handling. Yellow pear is getting out there in 70 days. Now, most of them, you know, funny enough, most of the heirlooms tend to be about an 80-day, 85-day plant.
Yeah, that's my experience.
Plant out to ripen. So they're not particularly fast.
So the fastness is something that we've bred into the plants in the 20th century.
Well, we select for specific characteristics, yes.
One of my favorite cherry tomatoes is one that you don't see very often, and I'm not even sure if Jung's carries it, but it's called Matt's Wild Cherry. It's a very vigorous plant, gets probably 7-8 foot long vines, branches quite a bit, and the cherries are small, probably mm-hmm. 3/4 of an inch in diameter, but they are very tender and very sweet,
I've never heard of that variety.
Matt's Wild Cherry.
It's a new one, one I haven't heard of before either.
Well, let's go back to the phones, 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. If you've got any gardening or horticulture questions for David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company or Paul Whitaker, give us a call. Let's go to Bill in Manawa. He's got a question about pruning apple trees. Bill?
Yes, I got red delicious apple trees, and I was wondering if it's too late to prune them.
It really is at this point of the year. The best time to be pruning is the very, very end of winter. You know, this year, really, it could have been done. Has it already broken? I mean, have they already broken bud?
I'm sure they have, yeah.
Yeah. You're better off waiting. Either do it in late fall, once the foliage is off and you can see what you're working with, or wait again until the end of winter and do it then.
Does it hurt the tree this time of year?
It doesn't hurt the tree. You are going to lose some fruit because you're going to be cutting away some spur wood that would have produced. The other concern is, of course, if there's sap flowing, you're going to have sap running out of the cut ends, and that can attract certain insects.
Oh, okay.
The other big problem this time of year could be fire blight, which is a bacterial disease.
Yeah.
And so if you're cutting open wounds where there's sap, that's a good entryway for that bacteria to get in. You can wind up losing whole limbs or even a whole tree if it's very susceptible.
So then, like you said, just leave them alone until fall.
I really would.
Or early next spring.
Very early spring.
Very early. Okay. Well, thank you very much. You answered my question.
All right, Bill, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's go to Pete in Cronenwetter. Pete's got a question about grapevine salvage. Pete, you're on Route 51. Hello.
Thanks, Glenn. I think my question is kind of related to the last fellow's. I have a beautiful grapevine, climbs all the way up the back of my house to a second floor balcony and across the balcony, and I get 20 or 30 bunches of grapes off of it every year. All I do is dump some Miracle-Gro on it a couple times a year. And I believe it's a Concord, but I'm not certain. My problem is that the balcony has to come down. I have to replace the balcony this year, and I want to know the best way to save the grape when I do that.
I'm going to presume this one's me again.
Well, we'll start with you, and we'll bounce it over to Paul and see if he has anything to add to it.
As far as you're taking a balcony away, the vine is planted directly underneath?
The vine climbs up some steel wires to the balcony and then across the balcony. The woody part of the vine does go all the way up and across the balcony.
It would have been, I think, better to have planned this and pruned it in the late fall of last year, because now have you got growth already breaking?
Yes, some buds are starting.
The only thing I can suggest is how low to the ground do you have branching?
Oh, not very low at all. Probably 7 or 8 feet up.
Oh boy. If it's possible, cut back to 2 or 3 spurs close to the main trunk. and then reconfigure your branching to develop from those spurs.
If I do that, you prefer that I do that late fall?
Well, late fall or late winter, before growth really gets underway.
Okay.
Can you put off the house renovation for another year?
I might be able to.
Sounds like a good excuse. Mm-hmm. We've all got better things to do in the summer.
Okay, thanks very much for your advice.
All right, Pete, thanks so much for the phone call. And again, if you'd like to talk to our experts, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. David, what are the best varieties of grapes to grow up north? I know a lot of them don't do very well in particularly cold weather.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, the last few years, they really have done a number on developing varieties, in particular the University of Minnesota. They've really done a terrific job of developing varieties that do quite well far north.
Mm-hmm.
We have Frontenac, which is a tremendous variety for producing wine. A new one this year is Frontenac Gris, which I'm told will produce a very good quality Chablis. For dessert grapes, Swenson introduced several varieties that have done well in the north. Fredonia, Swenson's Red, both varieties. Edelweiss is another one that do very well. Concord has been an old staple for a long, long time. And some years ago, Jung's found a grower that had a variety called King of the North, which produces a very black grape and has done extremely well.
David, I planted three of those along my back fence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I live in Merrill. I live in the cold part of Merrill, down low. I come in every morning and I read the temperatures, and usually the temperature for Merrill is colder than just about anywhere else in north central Wisconsin.
Oh, boy.
These King of the North plants, in 1 year, they've spread out and they've pretty much taken up the entire chain link fence.
They have tremendous vigor. I know, I hear that about them all the time.
And they do have seeds, and they're kind of tart, but
they have a
flavor to them that you can't get in the grocery stores and the supermarkets.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of positive comments made about them. If they have one negative, it is about the rate of vigor these plants tend to exhibit. They just keep on going and going and going.
Is it better up here to plant seeded varieties of grapes or seedless, or doesn't it make a difference?
At the present time, there are no seedless varietals that seem to be able to handle the winters and the zone that we live in. Virtually all the varieties that are available commercially for you to plant are seeded varieties.
And why is that, Paul?
I don't know.
Okay. This is live radio. We've stumped the experts.
Well, most of the time, I think I can help you actually with that one a little bit. Most of the time, a seedless characteristic is the direct result of normal crossbreeding practices. You're trying to develop a fruit, in this case, that has particular characteristics, a particular ripening pattern, or a particular level of sugar content, which is a vital thing if you're a viticulturalist and you're trying to make marketable wine. The seedless characteristic is a side benefit if you're going to sell those grapes for the dessert market, for the fresh eating market. But quite often the parents that are used for this process aren't necessarily grapes that you would think of as being super hardy. And so they tend to pass that on to their progeny, and the result is, you know, varieties that just can't make it this far north.
261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. We've got about 13 minutes left to the show, and we do have space for you in our phone lines if you want to get in some gardening questions or horticulture questions for our guests. And again, this show is just about gardening and raising plants in our inclement northern climate. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
I was out in my garden pulling up some weeds when I got to the place where I had planted those seeds. It was the biggest thing that I've ever seen. It was like a giant football, but the color was green. W-A-T-E-R in the yellow, and what's that spell?
Watermelon.
W-A-T-E-R.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
You get enough jargon and double talk in the rest of your life. Why would you want it with your science news? I'm Ira Flatow. Each week on Science Friday, we skip the bogus and buzzwords and don't dumb down the big issues in science, medicine, technology, and the environment. So join me on Science Friday as we discuss science sensibly. That's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Two 6-1-6-3-7-1 or 1-800-780-9742. Those are two other phone numbers for you, and they will connect you to our experts, David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company, Paul Whitaker of UW Marathon County. And we only have about 10 minutes left of the show. If you want to give us a call, we will try to answer your questions about gardening and horticulture in north central Wisconsin. David, if we want to get a head start on planting that spring garden, and it's usually not a good idea to do it until Memorial Day, is that correct? But if you want to get a head start and give those plants the extra boost that they need in the spring, do you have any suggestions?
There's one easy thing you can do. It's cheap. It only costs a sheet of plastic, and then Mother Nature will do everything else. If you lay a sheet of black plastic on a strip of ground where you plan to plant, say, tomatoes or peppers, anchor it down, either with soil or rocks, two things will happen. Radiant energy from the sun will basically help to almost semi-pasteurize that soil underneath the plastic sheet. And it'll also raise the temperature of the soil. And that's a vital thing for things like cucumbers, melons, peppers, tomatoes. They like really warm soil. Peppers, it's an absolute vital have to have.
Yeah.
Melons, too, really. Very cheap thing to do, easy to do, and it costs you nothing but a sheet of plastic.
And if you plant those peppers early, you think you're going to get a head start.
But and you're
they
not.
They never seem to recover from
well,
the cold
Well, you
weather.
Won't. They don't like a cold soil. They really, really don't want to be in cold soil. You will never be paid back in a generous way for planting them where it's cold.
What are the challenges, Paul, in trying to grow melons this far north?
Well, the challenges are they really like that warm soil. They don't like cold nights, and they don't like excessive heat, which fortunately we don't get too much of that here from the melon's perspective. And the length of season. So most melons might need 90 to 100 days to mature, and that's about the length of our growing season from frost to frost.
But what I find interesting is, every fall you can go to the pumpkin patch up at Helene's or any of the other sites here. They've obviously figured out a way to grow these plants, even though they do have a long time for maturation.
Yeah, I think the pumpkins and squash don't need quite as much heat. They're not quite as sensitive as the melons are. Melons are tricky in this area. I do have another trick, though, that I use quite a bit in my own vegetable garden to ramp up the season a bit. And it's called a floating row cover. Mm. A lot of people, you may see this, for example, where the utility company does some work and they've torn up somebody's yard. They come in and they plant some seed and they put that white wispy fabric over the top to get the grass to germinate. And that keeps the wind off of plants, which lets them do photosynthesis more than they would. A little plant with not many roots has to conserve water. And they have these little holes on the bottoms of the leaves called stomates that they'll close if it's windy, if they're drought stressed. And if you keep the wind off the plant, which this little wispy fabric does, they can do photosynthesis. They can keep growing faster. Mm. And it also gives you probably just a couple of degrees warmer air temperatures every night. It's like a little blanket. And I've put broccoli and cabbage, Brussels sprouts, other things, into the ground when my trowel actually hit frost. So the first couple inches of soil were thawed and there was ice underneath. I had plants that were either going to die or had to go in the ground, so I put them in, put the row cover on, and I was harvesting broccoli by the second and third week of June.
This is the same stuff that you see in construction sites, like along highways where they're putting in the new overpasses here in Wausau. You see that that ground cover with the grass underneath it?
Well, some of that is like a straw mat. This is just a real thin, filmy, filamentous white fabric.
Yeah, it's a spun polyester fiber.
Right. And I love that stuff. I swear by it for extending the season in this part of the country.
Where can you get it?
Me.
Okay. Jung Seed Company in Stevens Point. Let's go to Lori in Stevens Point right now. Lori, you're on Route 51, and let me give those phone numbers out. After Lori, we can probably squeeze in one more call if anyone wants to call us at 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Lori, you've got a pruning question.
I do. I have some Annabelle hydrangeas that I got from Jung's in town here, and they're doing very well. However, they're spreading out rather than growing up. And my question is, when is the appropriate time to prune these hydrangeas?
As with most deciduous shrubs, the best time, in my opinion, is right at the end of winter. The end of March, beginning of April is a good time to be out there and pruning.
Okay, so it's too late now?
It's a little late. If you want to chop some of those shoots down, those side shoots that are developing more of a horizontal growth habit, go ahead and cut them back.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, Lori, thanks for the call. 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. David, what's new this year? Every year the seed companies have new varieties that they tout at the front of their catalogs.
They do.
What are you pushing this year?
A lot of new perennial varieties have come out this year, in particular. We've seen plants coming from further afield. We have a new strain this year of delphiniums available called New Millennium Stars. They were bred by a man called Dowdleswell in New Zealand. They have a lot of the characteristics of the English Illatum delphinium type, a much enhanced flower spike, much bigger than you'd see with Pacific Giants, and very definitely perennial. The other advantage to them is they seem to have a lot better resistance to heat and humidity than the classic Illatum type does. And that really is going to be a benefit for perennial gardeners growing them in this part of the country.
Any new vegetable varieties?
There's a variety of cauliflower out called Graffiti. Produces a deep, deep, brilliant purple head.
Huh.
I do literally mean it. It is almost the color of claret. Very attractive looking. We have a variety called Cheddar, which quite literally, it looks the color of cheddar cheese. And just imagine a crudity where you have Graffiti, a deep, deep claret, Cheddar, a beautiful, brilliant orange, and then something like Snow Crown for a pure white. Really arresting looking plate.
Mix all of those together.
Yeah.
Huh. Any new varieties of tomatoes or peppers?
I think you're obsessed with peppers, aren't you?
I'm obsessed with tomatoes and peppers. It's
true. I get
that
feeling sometimes. Margaret's pepper. It finishes out as a red, and a very, very good block pepper. Finishes in 62 days, so it's a little faster than normal, really sweet, a good-looking pepper.
Yeah, any hot peppers that are new on the market?
That are new? No. No, we don't have any new habanero types or any of the hot ones, really, this year.
And what are people buying right now in Stevens Point? What are you seeing a spike in this early in the season?
Bare root sales have been very good. They were a little slow to take off initially because basically April was just such a bear. It was just a very hard month to be out there planting bare root stock. But bare root sales have held up very well. We've seen very heavy sales in fruit trees. Apples, pears this year have been big.
Really?
Yeah, we've moved a lot of pear trees.
Any varieties you'd recommend?
There's a couple that really do stick out that have done well. Hardy Wisconsin pear, it's a dwarf variety. Colette would be another one, has done very, very well in trials. We have a new variety that actually hails originally from, believe it or not, Bulgaria.
Really?
Ubeline. This one finishes very early. It actually finishes quite literally about a month earlier than a Bartlett.
So that would, something from Bulgaria, this particular variety, I guess, would do well in north central Wisconsin.
It would appear to, yeah. It would be a plant I think will do quite well here.
All right, very good. Let's hope the rest of the season is better than the start of it, David.
Boy, I hope so, too.
David Ryle of the Jung Seed Company in Stevens Point, Paul Whitaker, Associate Professor of Biology at UW Marathon County, thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn.
Yes, you like potato, and I like potato. You like tomato, I like tomato. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Oh, yes.
You
I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next Thursday, we look at prison overcrowding in Wisconsin as we welcome a La Crosse County Circuit Court Judge, John Perlich, who's come up with some innovative ideas and solutions to our broken criminal justice system. Joining him next week, Marathon County Administrator Mort McBain. Thanks to our executive producer and music editor, Rick Ryer, our phone screener, Kelson Quisler. Music selections today by Wausau native John McCutcheon, Arlo Guthrie, John Denver, Eric Clapton, and Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald. Thanks to all of you for riding with us today. I'm Glenn Moberg. Until next week, we're heading out of town.
You got pajamas. But we know we need each other, so we better call the police.